You do a weasel wrong. An old man told me, do a weasel wrong. Especially if you make the mistake of killing a weasel, then you're in trouble. Because brothers, sisters, family, they'll come for you. And they'll come for you when you least expect it. Very often when you're inside in bed in the dark of the night. And as he said to me, there's no point in trying to keep him out. A weasel will come through a small space, he'll come down the chimney. And by God, he'll of course make for your throat. He'll kill you. He'll be found in the morning with the marks of your throat. That's it. Storytelling was by accident, and that's the answer I have to give honestly to people, that it was a lucky accident in the sense that I was in UCG, in UIG as they nicely call it now, and I was doing my MA in linguistics, phonetics, and of course for phonetics you have to be absolutely precise. As you know, people judge you by your mistakes, not the good things you do. I'll always be looking for the one mistake he made, so you better make sure that there's neither spelling mistakes or note mistakes or factual mistakes or anything else. Now, you might say, what has that to do with storytelling? It has a lot, because when I meet old people, and all my stories are collected from old people, I've been doing this for the last 33 years, most of them are tremendous people, but what I always do is I check them up afterwards. I check up and I follow, because you see, it could be just a person telling you a yarn, which there's nothing wrong with. But if I get the notion that there could be truth in this happened in a particular place, I want to see that place. And I want to see, is there any kind of correlation between what I was told in the story and the place itself, if such a place exists. And what is remarkable is that in so many of the stories I'm told, when I do check them up afterwards, the place does exist. And the dimensions of the place, the fort was just there inside behind that gate, the hill was there, but there was a stream there. There is a stream there. You know, things sometimes are remarkably similar to what the person has been describing in the story. Now, I know that still doesn't prove that the story is true, but it at least proves that the person who's telling it to you knows what they were talking about. And most of these people, they're tremendous people to talk, they want to talk. And some of them, yes, you can't get away from them. Come on, Jenna, I have three more miles to walk yet. I'll call back, and I do. And that's what makes the difference. I keep calling back and back and back, and very often I'm at these people's funerals. Because you can't just walk away once you've got their stories. I like visiting schools, I like visiting prisons. It is interesting to visit them, tell them stories about things. Now, you say somebody who has killed somebody or who really has come up tough through a bad background, and to be telling them stories about the fairies, you know what I mean? Jeez, you think this is good? Well, fine, they listen. Now, in a sense, you have a captive audience in prison. I know they can't go anywhere, but that's not the point. If they didn't like it, they'd just tell you to fuck off, you know, straight up. But they don't. I've never had that reaction at all in prison. Amazingly so, that they're prepared to sit down, listen. Now, a lot depends on yourself, whether you're convinced of the thing or not, and if they see that when they ask questions, you can answer those questions, that you're not just lending off a story and that you have a story path like that. No, you can't do that. This notion of the fairies being, you know, the little Walt Disney fairies, and, you know, the little sparkly things with the wand and the come for your tooth and all the rest of it, that's a lot of nonsense. You mess with the Irish fairies and you're dead. And I often tell people about this book. If you want to sleep tonight, start at the beginning. If you don't want to sleep tonight, start at the end. The last story in that is a gruesome story, and it happened only about 5 miles from here. just over the Galway border there, about a man who, yeah, he didn't believe in the fairies, yes, the fairies were only for children. And he planted spuds in a fairy fort, just to prove the point. I don't believe in these fuckers, you know, at least. And the locals try to warn him, you know, hey, leave it. This isn't the kind of thing to be trying to prove that you're a man, over. He took no notice of him. But I tell you, that man died a ferocious, horrible death. Bit by bit, his skin fell off, his hair fell out, his teeth fell out, his nails fell out, fingernails, toenails. No, he died in stages, until he finally did die. And the fort is still there today. Nobody has interfered with it, because local people know the story, and whether you believe in it or not is neither here nor there. You know, maybe we're all very brave, you see, when we're in daylight, when we're surrounded by our gadgets and technology, when we have our friends, or when we have noise around us. But I've been in places where, when I know the story about them, I wouldn't feel comfortable being there at night. Now, whether it again would be my imagination playing on me, or I always like to leave, and I think this is vital with stories, I always like to leave a little corner of my mind open. This could be true. Why can't the fairies exist, we'll say? Now, I could say to the people who believe in God, well, that's completely irrational. Do you ever meet him? Huh? When do these dead people that you pray for come back to thank you? In most cases, no. But, there again, you have to keep your mind open. Maybe there are such things as miracles. We're told that there are. And if there are such things as miracles, on the other hand, look at all the suicide bombers you have now that blow themselves up in the name of their God. They believe in something. I mightn't agree with it, and it's not a nice thing. And that maybe it's a perverted belief, but it's all in the other world. And it can have terrible repercussions here in this world. And I keep that in mind all the time when I'm either telling the stories or whether I'm collecting them. Some of the people I collect these stories from are very, very, very convincing people. I don't believe all the stories I hear. No way. I'd be a sceptical, and maybe more sceptical than most people, because I've been listening to them for over 30 years. But there's always that little percentage that, when it comes down to that, you can't dismiss so easily, because you've got to know the person telling them the story. And if that person is the kind of person that you know has a respect for the either be a religion or the otherworldly, or we'll say if they're talking about their parents or family who are dead. Yeah, they're the kind of things that people usually don't make a joke about. And if you can hear stories about that are strange, unusual, it'll put you thinking, well, you know, maybe, just maybe, there is something to this. I always make a habit of watching people's faces as they tell me a story. And a face tells you a lot. You can tell by a person's face very often whether this story is just an entertainment, past the time, or whether this person really does believe what they're telling. I watch faces, and I tell you something. The story and the face very often does fit together.
Thank you. I am awake. Awake on the plain. I am the skill of the craftsman.
have some insight into the concept of experiential space, we may consider interaction among the experiential space continua of a highly unique group of individuals. In general, a study of the varying dimensions of human experience in the context of man in his society is known as human social cybernetics. In our experiment, 8 Category A subjects underwent pattern brain surgery, whose program was developed within the Academy's organic computer dialectic system. The object of surgery was to extend by a process called biochemical induction, the natural electrochemical network of the human brain. This extension would provide each subject with telepathic capabilities. A telepathist is one who can communicate with other minds by means which do not involve perception by the senses. Thus, telepathy is a form of extrasensory perception, or ESP. Our subjects were to be kept in isolation at the Institute for 3 months, where they were to prepare for their first meeting as a group. This meeting was to take place at the Academy Sanatorium in the Ontario.
Extrasensory perception.